for having me here. It's a pleasure to be in this beautiful country with this lovely weather and this exciting physics. Well, the last part was true, right? Now, and so I will talk about this this work that we did with Dumitrios Stefanassi, Tomas Andrade, and Rob Mann. So the main idea of the talk is that I will show how to use the multitrace deformation of the linear operators of the CFT to modify the equation of state in the holographic fluid. And in the gravity side, the multitrace deformation corresponds to generalized boundary conditions for the scalar field, which will make me talk also about hairy black holes. As a side result of the talk, I will show something that I found very interesting, that is, we provide a full characterization of the most general solution of a scalar tensor theory that probably the experts probably knew this, but we didn't find it published, and I found it really interesting. And in terms, so the most general solution of a scalar tensor theory can be parameterized in terms of one function. And we wrote this transport coefficient, that is the speed of sound, in terms of this function that fully characterizes the space of solutions, plus the boundary conditions. So you need these two ingredients, and with this, you construct this universal formula for the speed of sound. So this is the outline of the talk. I will try to be pedagogical, so I will review something that is a very old no-hair theorem by Bekenstein, which is, I think, why everybody believes that during a really long time that black holes have no hair. And I will show how the scalar fields in ABS avoid this theorem. Then I will show how the scalar fields in ADS can be, what is the holographic interpretation of this. I will talk a bit about the BF window. Then I will go to applications of these hairy black holes in holography. I will compute the speed of sound. I will do an explicit example in tight 2B supergravity. And I will show you what is the formula for every dimension and every possible scalar field. Okay, that is the final result. So this is the theorem of Bekenstein. It's very simple, and I found it really elegant. So the metric that you see there is the most general spherically symmetric static metric. And if let's talk about four dimensions, but this can be generalized to any dimension. And the second equation that you see there is the Klein-Gordon equation with an arbitrary potential, arbitrary self-interaction for a scalar field. Now, using this equation, you can prove that this has to be Schwarzschild. It has to be the Schwarzschild black hole. Why? It's because if you have this theory, so you have this theory satisfying some kind of Einstein equations where the Einstein tensor is equal to the energy momentum tensor, this by, even if you consider the back reaction, you will have to satisfy this equation. This is a consistency condition of the Einstein equations. So you always have to satisfy this equation, whether you consider back reaction or not. So let's consider that there is a black hole that you don't know what it is, but there is a black hole. Now let's prove that this is Schwarzschild. The proof is very simple, actually. So you just multiply the Klein-Gordon equation by dV d phi and by a square root of minus g, obtaining in this way the first line. Then you integrate that between r plus and infinity. You're assuming that this is asymptotically flat, which is a very strong assumption, but this is the part of the assumption. So this is the second line, is the integration between r plus and infinity. And then you just make an integration by parts to obtain the third line. In the third line, you get a boundary term. This boundary term, if you assume that phi is just a function of r, this boundary term has a grr here, and then this term vanishes because the inverse of GRR has a zero at R plus, and it vanishes at infinity because of the falloff of the scalar field, and because dV d phi goes to zero at infinity also in general. So you get only this term, so this is zero, and so you get only this term. This term, this is positive definite, and this is only a function of R. This is positive definite also because it's phi prime squared. So if the potential is convex, then phi has to be constant. Okay? This is the Bekenstein theorem. So so that if phi is a function, phi only depends on R, and the potential is convex, then the only possible black hole is Schwarzschild. Okay? And this is an Auger theorem. I found this also very beautiful because this applies to any gravity theory. So for any kind of equations, that, like in the sense that any kind of equation that the metric satisfy. If at the right-hand side you have the T mu of the of a scalar field, the same argument applies. Okay, so it's not only for Einstein but for any gravity theory. Then the of course the requirement of convexity of the potential is no longer relevant in ADS, as was shown by Breiterona and Friedman. You can have tachyonic scalar fields in ADS. And these scalar fields will not spoil the perturbative stability of the spacetime if the mass of the scalar field is above the Breiterona-Friedman bound that is given by this expression. This is true for Dirichlet boundary conditions. Okay? So for Dirichlet boundary conditions, all scalar fields that are tachyonic but not that tachyonic will not make your vacuum being unstable, at least perturbatively. And then the, and you can immediately see how this theorem no longer applies. Okay. So in a, this, the scalar fields have applications in ADS-CFT. I want to show you now, I will outline how you derive the interpretation of the different falloff of the scalar fields as souls and BEVs in the CFT. So let's take this metric. This is a most general asymptotically ADS metric. This is, in general, what is the falloff of a scalar field in asymptotically ADS spacetime. I introduce these factors here the, of powers of the ADS radius because this provides the right normalization for alpha and beta in the sense that their engineering dimension is equal to their conformal dimension. And this makes them more natural from the point of view of the CFT. This delta plus and delta minus are related with the mass of the scalar field in this way. All this can be computed just by solving asymptotically the Einstein equations. If you have this metric and this guy and this falloff, it can be shown that this is the relevant action principle with this is where this is the counter term. Okay? This is for scalar fields that are above the Breiterona-Friedman bound. Otherwise, you need a modification in the counter term. But for all the other scalar fields, this works perfectly fine. Then the on-shell variation of the action, so you make the variation, the bulk term cancels, and you get this boundary term. You see that the first part comes from the variation of this guy who drops you this term at the boundary. And the second, delta phi, the two there, cancel these two, and you get this term. Now it's now you need to say what is what are the things that you are introducing here. One is the normal vector to the boundary, that is R over L. And what is the, what is delta phi? Delta phi, what we mean by delta phi is the variation of these coefficients, okay, delta alpha and delta beta. So you replace this guy here, you replace this guy here, you replace phi here, and you compute what it is this. You can immediately see that the divergence cancel, okay? The divergence cancel because the mu phi is, this drops you a delta minus, the leading order drops you a delta minus, and you get a delta minus minus one here, sorry, plus one here. And this plus one cancels with this R, okay? So this exactly cancels this guy, and you get only the sublimiting term. The sublimiting term give you this finite variation, okay? So delta, the variation of the Euclidean action is equal to all this thing times beta delta alpha gamma, okay? Where gamma is the boundary metric, is the finite part of the metric that I introduced before. And this is the central equality probably in ADS-CFT, where it tells you that how the Euclidean action in the gravity psi is related with the large N partition function in the CFT side. Okay, this is in general this power here depends on what is the story you're considering, and you also have some funny constants that appears here that are also depending on the theory. Then you make this identification where this dimensionless factor that appears in the calculation is identified with the n to some power and this funny constant. And this immediately allows you to identify this object here. You see from this calculation, you can identify immediately that beta is the expectation value of some operator in the CFT. Mm-hmm. And the source is identified with the other. This is the standard ADS CFT. The factors are maybe a bit different, but this will be useful in the future. So what is particular to this BF window when scalar fields are within this range is that you can have also not only this interpretation, but you can have the interpretation where alpha is the BEV and beta is the source. And in general, you can have a more general interpretation in which alpha is a function of beta. So this construction goes like this. You take this is standard ADS CFT again. You just add this term to the CFT action. So you just add a potential of this of the BEV, and you subtract it. Okay, you add and subtract the Taylor expansion. The thing is that in ADS in the large N, the W of O, the expectation value of W of O is equal to W of the expectation value of O because large N factorization. This guy canceled. This is just you add it because it's necessary, but this is identically zero. So here I am just adding zero to the Euclidean action. Okay, but this is useful because then I pass everything that depends on beta. I pass it to the gravity side of this equality, because you just can factor out this from this expectation value, because these are just constant. I pass it to the gravity side, and then I get this equality, okay? Just and with this equality, I say that this is my deformed Euclidean action, and this is my deformed CFT, where I have added a potential of the BEV in the CFT. The addition, and because of that, the addition of these terms are interpreted in ADS-CFT as a deformation of the theory. Okay, so you are adding a potential, you are adding a self-interaction in the CFT. And this is related with the boundary condition in the gravity side, as I will show now. In the gravity side, so now I have this potential that I will show you again. So I have this term. So now when I make the variation of this guy, I obtain the previous variation that was beta delta alpha, and I also obtain the variation of this. So the variation of this is W prime minus the variation of beta is 1, so W prime minus W prime is 0 minus beta W prime prime, okay? So this is the result of the variation of this guy, and you see that this is what I get here. So minus beta W prime prime. So now I put all this together, and I get that the variation of the Euclidean action is equal to beta times delta of something else. It's no longer delta of alpha. This delta of something else is then recognized as the source of the in the CFT side, and beta is still the BEV. Okay, this is how it is done. The thing is that from the point of view of the gravity side, you are saying that the variation of the action is zero provided this is fixed. So when you fix this, you fix a non-trivial relation between alpha and beta. And this non-trivial relation between alpha and beta, between the leading and the subleading term of the scalar field, corresponds to a non-trivial boundary condition. Mm-hmm. And this is the way in which this non-trivial boundary condition are related to the formations on the CFT. Okay. Well, people realized, I think in the 90s already, that there are hairy black holes in ADS. This was done by Sudatsky Gonzalez, I think, first, and then by these Japanese people. And then there was a lot of applications on these things. Here, really, the number of papers is exponentially large. I am mentioning the one that are more related with my talk, but there is a lot of information about this. So the thing is that when you go and when you want to construct a hairy black hole, so what can you do with this? You can take your gravitational action. Now I will just talk about five dimensions from now on. So you just take your five-dimensional action, where you have your Einstein term, you have your scalar field, you have your potential, and then you add counter terms for this is the Balogh-Subramanian and Krauss part, plus the Gibbon-Hawking term. And here you have the counter term for the scalar field, and here you have the finite term that arises from ADS-CFT. That is this W minus beta W prime term. And then from this, you can construct your dual energy momentum tensor, which satisfy for a black hole, for a hairy black hole, this will have the form of a perfect fluid. And from this, you can compute your speed of sound. This is how it's done. So you take what is p, what is rho, and you take the derivative, and then you compute what is the speed of sound using this formula. Then people proposed that this was Gapseler and Nellor, that this can be only be seen in terms of bulk quantities. How this is done is that P is minus the free energy. The free energy then is the temperature times the entropy minus the mass. When you take the derivative of this, you get T delta S plus S delta T minus delta M. So you get a cancellation of T delta S minus delta M. And you get S delta T. And rho is just the delta rho, that is the denominator, is just T delta S. So you can see that this can be written in this way. Okay. And then the same people argue that, okay, then let's try to do this with an example. This example is when the potential is like a alluvial potential. And they compute the speed of sound, and they get that the speed of sound is 1 over 3 minus gamma squared over 2. Okay, so where gamma is this parameter in the Liouville potential. Then the thing is that this calculation, the problem with this calculation is the thing that I will show now. The problem with this calculation is that first, this potential has no critical point, so there is no asymptotically ADS region. And so it's not true that in asymptotically ADS spacetime, you can compute the speed of sound in terms of bulk quantities, forgetting about what is the boundary, okay? Because you always need to let something fix, but you let fix in ADS-CFT is the source. So this is the right formula. And this formula, of course, didn't arise in this context because these metrics that have this potential are not asymptotically anything. Okay. So this is the right formula, and I will use this formula to compute what is the speed of sound. This in particular led to a lot of literature where they say that the speed of sound has to be bounded by 1 over 3. The square of the speed of sound is always smaller than 1 over 3 arising from this calculation, and there was a lot of literature. I will show that this is not true. When you have a double trace deformation, this is not true. So in ADS, the hairy black hole problem can be written in this is a metric that is has three free functions. Of course, I can fix one of these functions, but I just let them free to fix my gauge later. Okay, I can redefine these functions in terms of set and y, and I can see that the Einstein equation reduced to this. Okay, here you get v prime and some nonlinear expressions, and this system can be decoupled. And can be decoupled in a single scalar, in a single equation for this variable set that has this form. Now, if you appreciate, now why is interesting to see this? Because, well, this is technical, but it's interesting. Is that y is zero at the horizon? Y is zero at the horizon because y is proportional to f, and f is the blackening function. So y is zero at the horizon. So the fact that y is zero at the horizon implies that for the system to have regular solutions, you need to have the condition that set at the horizon is such that this term also vanishes to cancel the fact that y is zero at the horizon. So since this fixed the initial condition of phi at the horizon, so of set at the horizon. So set is completely determined at the horizon by the value of the potential and its first derivative. Then you replace, so now you evaluate this object at the horizon. At the horizon, this vanishes because it's the same than this guy. And you know already what is set at the horizon. You replace that here, and you will get an expression for psi dot at the horizon. So in this way, you have that set is completely determined by the value of phi at the horizon, the potential, and the derivatives of the potential. The most general solution can be written only using this information. So there is one iteration constant at the horizon that is the value of phi horizon. Since set is related with the areal function, the function that defines the area of the black hole, is related with set through this function A. Now that you have set, imagine that you have integrated this function, you have set, you can now find A. So you get one extra integration constant. That is A. A is the entropy. Because at the horizon, phi is phi horizon, so this integral is zero. And you get that A at the horizon is just proportional to this. So when you compute the entropy, this is the entropy density, you will get this. So the most general solution of the system has two integration constants, actually. It has the value of phi horizon and has the area of the black hole. Now, from the I will the discussion so far was completely general, but in five dimensions, 20 this type 2B supergravity has 42 scalar fields. 20 of these scalar fields have m squared equal minus 4. That is the Brightelona-Friedman bound. When a scalar field saturates the Brightelona-Friedman bound, the falloff has a logarithmic term that is this. So I will discuss just now these supergravity fields. You see that only from this expression you can find something that is actually very interesting, that take this expression, multiply by e to the a. Asymptotically, this is r squared over l squared, because this is the areal function. Okay? So asymptotically, this goes to r squared over l squared. So this cancels this r squared. And this is subleading. So asymptotically, you have this relation. You take the derivative of this relation with respect to a, that is asymptotically is log of r squared, you will get that this term is order one, and you will get this expression. So you find this, you find that alpha, that is the leading order of the scalar field, is related with phi horizon and this other integration constant, that is the area of the black hole, in this way. And this is completely universal. Okay? So you can find the relation between the boundary integration constants and the bulk integration constant in a universal way, at least for one of the integration constants. That is the entropy of the black hole. You can do the same for the other integration constant corresponds to these terms that arise in the falloff of the metric function. That is like the mass. If there would not be a black hole, this would be the mass. You can do a similar exercise for this guy, and you will get that the relation between mu and the functions and the integration constant should be this. So, and then you can do something similar for beta, and you will get this. This is the most non-trivial relation, because the other ones actually you can get them for dimensional analysis, and in hindsight, this at the beginning was very surprising to find this. But it's just that is with this, they have the right dimensionality. But beta is more surprising. So using this, the fact that mu has this relation, the mu has this relation with the integration constants of the bulk, and alpha has this relation with the integration constant from the bulk, you have that mu over alpha squared is independent of the entropy, okay? Because alpha goes like a to the 2/3. And mu goes to a to the 4/3. So mu over alpha squared is a function that is completely independent of the entropy. And this function completely characterizes your space of solutions. Okay? We call this function the black hole line, in analogy with a similar construction that was done by Horowitz and Hertog, where they construct something called the solidon line. Now, set on the other, so why this completely determine the system? So this set that I will use this a lot now, this set is this other guy, okay? So you see, if I fix set now, if I tell you set is some given function of alpha, what I would be telling you is I will be giving you a boundary condition. Why? Because then you will get a relation between beta and alpha. So another way of fixing the boundary condition is telling you what is set as a function of alpha. So this is what I am doing now here. I tell you what is set as a function of alpha. I can, from a general theory, I can compute what is the pressure, what is the density, and now I can compute this object. And as you can see, this object only depends on this black hole line and on the boundary condition. And you get this 1/3 plus something. You see, when set is a constant, omega prime is 0, and you recover the conformal value. This set equal constant corresponds to the conformal invariant boundary conditions. Now let's work an example. Let's see how all this is can be done in practice. So this potential is a consistent truncation of supergravity. It's the one that leave invariant the SO3 times SO3 isometries of the phi sphere on the truncation. And then the standard ADS CFT dictionary tells you that the VEV corresponds to this relation of the Super-Jan-Mills scalars, okay? So then you go, you solve the equations, you have to do this numerically, and you find what is your f of z, okay? So this is the most general f of z corresponding to this potential. This is not telling you much, but this tells you more. You also can find, using this, the the space of solution of this theory. This corresponds to the space of solutions. So alpha is the leading order of the falloff of the scalar field, beta is the subleading, and mu is the parameter that appears in the mass. And they have to be constrained in a surface of codimension 1. And so all this surface, well, this surface is truncated, but all this surface corresponds to different possible black holes. You see that? In principle, you have two integration constants. These two integration constants reduce to one integration constant when you fix the boundary condition. Fixing the boundary condition is a relation between alpha and beta. A relation between alpha and beta is a plane in this space. So the intersection of alpha of a plane in this space with this surface gives you a one-parameter family of black hole. So in principle, all the boundary conditions that you can imagine, not all, but many, well, actually infinite number of boundary conditions will give you infinite possible black hole solutions. So every potential in ADS with masses in the Breitner-Lona-Friedman window have a space of solution of infinite possible different hairy black holes. There are, and each one corresponds to a different boundary condition. And this black hole exists provided the boundary condition intersect the surface of existence of this hairy black hole. Okay, with this you can compute the spiral sound. The spiral sound is has this form. This line is 1/3. And this is for a double trace deformation. Okay, for a double trace deformation, you can see that the spiral sound is actually independent of the coupling constant of the double trace deformation. And then this is the result. It's always bigger than 1/3. Okay. For large set, you go to high temperatures and you recover the conformal value, that is 1/3, and it's the same when set goes to zero, then the baby is zero, and then you also recover the conformal value. The another thing that you can write in terms of this this black hole line that I introduced here is the energy density for this double trace deformation has this form. When you go and compute this, this is a positive definite. So the energy is bounded from below for these black holes. Okay, and this is also another interesting result. So the black holes doesn't violate the positivity of the energy. So now, in general, you can do the same exercise, and you can compute what is alpha, beta, and mu in every dimension and from every conformal dimension, and obtain. And obtain in this way a universal formula for the speed of sound, which is given only in terms of this function f that completely characterizes the most general solution of the system, and the w and omega that depends that completely characterize the boundary condition. So this is the form.
Sorry, is it crucial to? It looks like. This framework is very sensitive that you have a single scalar field. So presumably, if you have several scalar fields.
Well, actually, this is a very good question. That, I have been studying this single scalar field system for a while. I think now it's time to go to more something
else.
So
the point I'm trying to make is that if you have a single scalar field, effectively you are trading a scalar for a radial coordinate, and that allows these nice features. Where you can relate boundary conditions at both ends. And there are some issues if there are several scalars.
Yeah, of course, then the next thing would be to study something with at least two scalar fields, like the n equal 2 star model.
Yeah, or any supersymmetric compactification.
Yeah, and see whether some of these features arise. Actually, I give this talk in Imperial College, and Gauntlet told me something similar. That that maybe this will not survive to more general truncations.
Can I have another? Hmm? So if you go a page back.
Back?
Yeah.
This?
So this formula. So typically there are normalization scheme ambiguities, and especially when you have scalars, and then I can pretty much make this energy density anything I want at the expense of finite counter troubles. So.
Yeah, well, the thing is that you would need in that case, so if you want to take in account the one loop renormalization, you can do that. And then you can compute what would be the. Then you would actually change the boundary condition.
No, I'm not changing the boundary. I'm just going to add the finite counter term.
Yeah, but if you really want to change your renormalization scheme, you need to introduce function of the BEV at the boundary. And this would imply that.
It's going to be a source. So the finite counter terms are completely.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's like, say, in the dimension 2 operator, in the case of ADS5, mm-hmm. That would be a counter term. Which is m to the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that m to the fourth in holographic renormalization ambiguity can come with arbitrary coefficient. And that allows me pretty much to shift the energy to anything I want. So I'm not sure
let me,
the significance of thing being positive or negative.
Okay, let me tell you something. So there are two options that the contour terms will be either function of the BEV. Or function of the source. If they're a function of the source, then the variation of these guys, then because this is the on-shell, this is the on-shell value of the energy. So if this is just a function of the source, on shell those terms will be zero because the source is zero on shell. And then, there is another possibility that the counter terms are function of the BEV, and then that actually would change the value.
I agree with that. I'm only talking about source.
But then, if the source, I don't think that there is much problem.
I think what you're saying is probably true, assuming that you have supersymmetry. If you don't have supersymmetry, there is no, much like in ordinary quantum field theory, the concept of zero energy is not defined.
I see what you mean.
So that has a one-to-one correspondence in holographic renormalization in exactly the way I said.
Okay.
Of course, this has no effect on the speed of sound because you vary.
You vary with the source fix.
Yes.
So and then these are on-shell computations, so at the end you put the source to zero. Yes. So, because as I said, like in the ADS-CFT, like, thank you for your question, it's very good. So it's in the CFT side, like the source is the boundary condition. So the fact that alpha is related with W in this way, this is the source. So when you say that W is satisfy this, so you make all this vanish. So this vanishes when alpha satisfies the boundary condition, because the boundary condition is such that this vanishes. This is what people do. This is what we do. Okay. So, okay, then the conclusions are this, that every theory in the BF window has infinite number of hairy black holes. Every hairy black hole solution has different thermodynamics, which means that the speed of sound is actually different depending on your boundary condition, which is very natural, right? So if you introduce a deformation in the CFT, you would expect that the speed of sound is no longer 1 over 3. But what is more interesting, maybe, is that the speed of sound is actually larger than 1 over 3. The speed of sound square is larger than 1 over 3. And this actually had some discussion even for people doing astrophysics, that because there was this boundary, that this was this thing that the people were saying that this has to be always less than 1 over 3. Some people wrote a paper saying that, well, what happens if neutron stars, the speed of sound is always bounded by the conformal value and they get some restriction on the masses of the neutron stars. But this, I think, is no longer relevant. Then, well, and then what we did on, in terms of like the technicalities, that the characterization of the theory in terms of a single function allows you fully codify the numerical integration of the system in a simple form. So this is interesting because, of course, if you want to find all the possible solutions to a system of differential equations numerically, you always find the problem of how I plot this, how I put this in a form in which I can use it. And this function f has this information, and it's a nice way to use it. Okay, that's all. Okay, thank you.